This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. Later in the show, we'll be talking about how differences in culture, language, religion, and politics are handled by healthcare systems. That's after Miccosukee Tribal Police took a newborn from her parents last week in Miami. The baby has been returned since. But first, the United States Supreme Court is currently deliberating on a case that could change how electoral districts are drawn in this country. The case of Gill v. Whitford is about the constitutionality of partisan gerrymandering. While gerrymandering for racial or ethnic reasons have been deemed unconstitutional, the Supreme Court has only identified extremely partisan gerrymandering to be unconstitutional and has never agreed on how extremely partisan can be defined, leaving that question to lower courts to decide. Gill v. Whitford could change that. Today we're joined by Pamela Goodman. She's president of the League of Women Voters of Florida to get a bit of a history lesson on the practice of gerrymandering and a sense of where we might be heading. She was the lead for the League on all redistricting issues, including getting its amendments 5 and 6 passed by Florida voters in 2010, which dealt with how legislative and congressional districts are drawn here in the Sunshine State. Pamela, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much, Mike. My pleasure.
We're talking about gerrymandering on this part of today's show. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, give us a call now. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Pamela, let's start with the basics. Drawing electoral districts for political gain is nothing new in this country, right?
No, not at all. In fact, the term gerrymandering goes back to the 1800s when a specific politician was drawing a district that favored himself. And his name happened to be have Jerry in it. And the district that he was drawing ended up looking somewhat like a salamander so that he could get really choosing his voters versus voters choosing him. And that's hence where the name gerrymandering began. And that's essentially what it is. First of all, let's be really clear about the seriousness of gerrymandering within the political field. This is a blood sport. This is a politician's livelihood, making sure that if they can, they draw or have a district drawn for them that protects them, where they are really choosing their voters, whether it's by political party or whether it's by geographic or the many standards that go into drawing districts. If they're choosing their voters versus voters going into that ballot box and choosing the politicians as their elected officials.
And this is a truly bipartisan issue, correct? This is not a either side or the other. This is they all do it.
No, you know, the League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan organization, and we, along with Common Cause, also another nonpartisan organization, we're the two lead organizations on what you spoke about leading into the story, putting Amendments 5 and 6 on the ballot, which those were rules. Up until then, and those were voted by 63%, over 3.1 million voters back in 2010, up until that point in time, hard to believe, but there were no rules for this football game.
Huh.
Our legislatures were, you know, they were the ones that were the players. That was constitutional, but there were no rules really put in place for them to follow to draw districts.
At what point was the constitutionality of gerrymandering for racial or ethnic reasons challenged?
That really began with the Voting Rights Act.
Okay.
And, you know, everything that revolved around that. And that was a big part of Amendments 5 and 6 and the protection of that inherent in them.
What is the current process for drawing congressional and state legislative district boundaries? Can you just give us a little bit of an overview of how it happens?
Sure. So it all begins, it's done once every 10 years. And it all begins with the census. The census taken all across the country, and a very interesting and quite alarming announcement came out of our federal administration today regarding the census. But the census is to be taken looking at really what our population is, how many of us are there, what are our age groups, and where do we live? Where is the population at? And then based on that census, that basis, it is truly each state's separate legislature at this point in time and or a redistricting commission if a state has passed that as an additional statute or referendum, it is their responsibility then to take that census information, look at their own state, and to draw districts. Until 5 and 6 were passed back in 2010, the Florida legislature, as I said, had no standards. So for the very first time in 2012, they had rules to play this game by. And they were really simple, and still are, really simple rules. So you can't draw a district to favor an incumbent, to favor an incumbent's political party, to favor any political party, and just some other pretty basic things. They have to be fairly equal in size. They have to follow natural geographic boundaries, not jumping rivers or large bodies of waters. They have to be fairly compact. And then, of course, the voting rights requirements that came out of the VRA are also part of them as well. So they're not overly difficult to understand. They were passed, and in 12, and it will now be 2022 when our legislature will be faced with drawing these districts based on the 2020 census that's done. They had a very difficult time for the first time drawing those districts with all of a sudden these new rules in place that ensued in about 5 years of litigation, actually.
Is the presumed goal of this process, if you take the partisanship out of it, to accurately reflect the political demographics of the people who are living in that district? Is that like that? Is that the simplest way to say that's what it's supposed to be doing?
I think that's a fair summary. Yes, and that's why our campaign was entitled exactly that: Fair Districts. Districts should be fair, equal in size, compact, but fair also, not drawn with any kind of partisan intent.
I'm joined today by Pamela Goodman. She's president of the League of Women Voters of Florida. We're discussing the practice of partisan gerrymandering. To join our show, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Or you can ask a question or make a comment on Facebook or on Twitter. We're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, use the hashtag GCL. So remind us real quickly what Amendments 5 and 6 are about. They're about how legislative, they put the rules in place for how both congressional and state legislative districts are drawn, correct?
That's correct. And they had to be two entirely separate initiatives because they were citizen initiatives. We had asked and had wanted the legislature to pass these kinds of reforms for years. And it is always our last recourse to have the people go through the citizen initiative process. We had to collect over at that point in time over 800,000 petitions for each amendment, and then the amendment itself has to be authorized by the Supreme Court and that it follows certain mandates. Not that it's a good amendment or a bad amendment in a voter's point of view, but that it's a certain amount of words, that it's a single subject. And then after it passes that court review, an immense amount of petitions that all have to be signed by verified registered voters in Florida, split out by specific congressional districts for the 2010 amendments 5 and 6. It was about 850,000 for each. So over 1.6 million petitions needed to be signed to be placed on that ballot in 2010.
And it's fair to say you've alluded to this, that they remain contentious, I guess would be a way to put it. Can you kind of give us a snapshot of where they are with implementation and the challenges that have been made to them?
Well, so they really aren't right now. I mean, final decisions were made. They passed in 2010. Immediately, Governor Scott filed, he was the first to file a court case. About 15 court cases ensued after that. The League of Women Voters of Florida with Common Cause were the plaintiffs in the majority of those cases, really in all of those cases. And the defendants were our Secretary of State and our legislature because it was really their responsibility to implement them. So it was all about how fair and how correct they were in following the Constitution. In the end, as I said, the legislature found it incapable to draw maps for each one of those elections over the course of 2012 all the way until 2015 that passed the muster in both lower courts and in higher courts that passed the muster, according to the courts, of what those mandates were. Finally, in 2015, in an extremely, unbelievably alarming decision handed down by our Supreme Court, and this was after previous decisions, but it was in July of 2015, after we had been in a major court case challenging the congressional districts, where they were challenging the congressional districts and the mandates, an extremely strong decision handed down by our Supreme Court that ruled that the legislature had to come back into special session, had to follow the mandates of Amendments 5 and 6 to redraw the maps that were in place, that the court held themselves as the final acceptor or not of those maps, and that it had to be done in a very short period of time, under 100 days. So the court really took our legislature to the woodshed and really mandated that they get this done once and for all and with a final decision. They proceeded to do that. They called a special session and proceeded to do that. At the same time, we were pursuing our Senate district seats in litigation. And when the Senate saw what was really coming to be through litigation with the congressional seats, July 15, they actually filed an alarming consent judgment, which basically said that we consent. We now confess that, yes, we the legislature did draw the Senate maps with complete partisan intent in mind, protecting incumbents, and we too will now go back into special session to redraw the Senate maps. So all of that was done in the course of the next few months. The congressional maps were never accepted that the legislature drew. Maps that the League of Women Voters of Florida and Common Cause drew were the maps that were finally accepted by our Supreme Court in December of 2015, and the Senate then backed off of their ensuing litigation and also accepted the maps. A lower court accepted the maps that the League of Women Voters and Common Cause had drawn as the ones that most closely followed the mandates of Amendments 5 and 6. So those maps were in place, have been in place only for one congressional election, even though this all started almost 10 years ago, mm-hmm. and that was the 2016 election. So we're looking forward to the 2018 elections when they will have been in place for a second election cycle to see the outcomes.
Interesting. How are electoral district boundaries drawn in other democracies around the world? Are we an outlier, or is partisan gerrymandering pretty common?
Above my pay grade, Mike.
No worries.
I can talk about Florida, and I can talk about our country. But that is a really excellent question, and I'm sure someone has probably written a book about that, but that hasn't been me.
And we'll follow up on that. I'm just thinking that there, you know, surely there could be, especially in the world we have with data and technology, that there surely would be some way, I think, that it could be done in a way where there isn't partisanship. But I guess that would take the people who make the rules to decide to do it that way.
Well, and that's what's so very different about drawing the maps after the consensus from when this all started back in the 1800s with gerrymandering. Back then, you really were on a piece of paper, with a pen drawing districts.
Right.
There is so much technological advances and softwares that, and we were involved with it, obviously, the League of Women Voters. The legislature, it was amazing that they had such a difficult time hand-wringing and going into special session, and by the way, spending over $10 million in both litigation and special session, protecting what they knew were maps that didn't fit the mandates that had been passed by those 3.1 million voters, and in litigation, and then also spending taxpayer dollars and calling those special sessions. But hand-wringing and really making it look so terribly, terribly difficult. It's not. I mean, it's now, you know, the press of a finger, let's try this one. And, you know, until you come up with a district that, once again, most closely fits mandates. So it's not that pen on a piece of paper looking at population as it was hundreds of years ago.
Right. So what is the U.S. Supreme Court case Gill v. Whitford all about? They've already heard oral arguments. They're considering expected to rule later this year, I think. Do you have a sense of you know, can you unpack that a little bit for our listeners?
I really can't. My apologies, but it certainly does have to do with partisan gerrymandering, and as you said at the head of the show, the definition of partisan gerrymandering. So a lot is left to be seen, and a lot is left to unfold in that case. It'll be a very interesting one, and it will be revolutionary, just as ours was in Florida, and set a precedence for the rest of the country in having standards in the Constitution for the legislators to follow. There is one thing I'd like to talk about a bit, which just happened today, if you don't mind.
Oh, go ahead.
If you recall, if we go back to what's the beginning of this whole process? It's done every 10 years, and that's the census. And we probably all know and have lived through the census taking every 10 years, which the goal of the census, again, is to determine how many people are living in our country, where are they located, where are they clustered, you know, and that information is to be used for a lot of really positive things, infrastructure in our country, transportation in our country, just a whole bevy of things is the reasons why we do, why we need to gather that information. It was just announced by the administration today that they are adding an additional question to that census. And that question is regarding your citizenship status. Are you a U.S. citizen? Are you not a U.S. citizen? And again, where do you reside? What is your residence? And all the rest of the information. That has never been a question that has been asked in this census. And the League of Women Voters U.S. and League of Women Voters of Florida, following that suit, finds that question very, very alarming. You know, people should feel very free about giving the government information for this census, but the entrance of that question will immediately put both citizens and non-citizens on guard and make them very fearful about filling out the rest of that information. And the loss of that information is extremely detrimental to our democratic process and everything that we've been talking about in this article. So we are quite alarmed by the addition of this question, and we'll be following up and talking about any kind of repercussions that may be taken because of it.
And that was just today that came out, so presumably we'll be hearing about that in the news cycle later throughout the evening.
That's correct. It just came out this morning.
Mm-hmm. You know, we only have a couple minutes left, but I just want to explore. Do you think that it would be fair to say that the, you know, overtly partisan gerrymandering is at least in some ways responsible for how polarized we are? I mean, it seems like, you know, is there a link there, do you think?
I think there's so many tentacles into how partisan we are. I will tell you one fact that points in the completely opposite direction.
Okay.
And that is one that we are highly involved in, and that is doing voter registration. It's been our wheelhouse since 1920 when the League of Women Voters started and women got the right to vote. And we said, okay, well, the first thing we have to do is register them to vote, and then we have to educate them so that they vote in a very informed way. And we were started as a nonpartisan organization then. So voter registration is really our wheelhouse. If you take a look at the numbers in Florida and really across the country, the largest number of people that are registering to vote for the first time or are changing their voter registration are changing to a NPA status. And that's not independent. Independent happens to be a political party.
Right, right.
NPA is no party affiliation. So people that are registering to vote want to vote and want to make sure they're at that ballot box, but they really don't want to identify with a specific, many of them, about a third in the state of Florida now, are registered NPAs. So, you know, when they talk about Florida being a very purple state, we are almost equal. And I mean, it's a little over 5 million. It's in the upper high 4 millions. D's, a bit more registered voters than R's. But right behind that, at about 3.8 million, are no party affiliation voters. So they're a huge segment of our voting block. And we continue to see that portion grow.
Oh, interesting. Well, that is all the time we have for this part of the show. I want to thank my guest, Pamela Goodman, is president of the League of Women Voters of Florida. Pamela, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Mike. Anytime.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, the story of tribal law being enforced at a Miami-Dade hospital. Last week, a newborn was taken from her parents by Miccosukee police on a tribal court order. We'll hear the latest in that case from the Miami Herald reporter covering it. That's when we come back. I'm Mike Canary. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.